Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
Hey guys, another episode of Yolitics here. It's the unofficial podcast of the great state of Texas.
Jason, and you look relaxed.
I'm very relaxed, man. Look, this is like our listeners can't hear this, but I always have to like wear a blazer I have like behind the door here just in case our bosses see this.
Right.
I want to look like I'm dressed up, but I have a t-shirt.
What do you have on underneath there? A tank top or what is that?
It's one of those things that Chevy Chase wore in Christmas Vacation. What do you call those things? It just goes to my mid-chest level. Chest it up, man. Great. That's all we shoot here. What are you drinking today, Wheeler?
I am drinking an Allstadt Kolsch out of Fredericksburg
that
today.
That is a great beer, my friend. Allstadt
is it is not Allstadt, sorry. Yes, it is refreshing and balanced, it says, and I agree. how about you? What are you having?
I'm having an old trusty favorite here, man. This is Local Buzz. Big fan of Local Buzz. I don't remember why they had to get rid of the tops that opened all the way, but they had to get rid of those when they started selling it like nationwide.
So you used to be able to open it like a big wide mouth at the top.
The whole top would come off, which was really cool.
Maybe it was just becoming a little much. Maybe people were downing it too fast.
Probably drinking it too fast, man, but that's good.
Sip responsibly.
Right. Honey Rye Golden Ale. I tell you, though, I went out of town to Broken Bow, Oklahoma the other day. Never been.
Yeah, nice.
And it was a cool little place. And had a few Allstadt beers that my friend brought. The blue ones.
Oh, so you took some import. You imported to Oklahoma then. You brought your Texas beers in.
Yeah, didn't Oklahoma have a few years ago where there's like 2% beer? Like, you know, I don't know what that means, but it's like, I always thought it was only 2% of
I don't know,
Texas
but that's, that does sound like something Oklahoma would
Oklahoma.
Do.
Oklahoma, I mean, come on. Yeah, 3%. My former Oklahoman who's on the call here with us, our producer Taylor Lumsden said it's 3%. Actually, our other producer, Michael McCardle, there's a lot of Oklahoma represented on this call here.
Well, you won't find any in me.
Yeah.
There's no Oklahoma here.
So let's talk about the big news this week in Texas politics is going to be what happens in the Texas legislature. And it's something that we thought was going to happen on Monday. It's starting in the Senate State Affairs Committee. And we've talked about it the past few weeks on Inside Texas Politics. It's called the election integrity bills that are out there right now. And it's, you know, nationwide, there are 250 similar pieces of legislation across the country that aim to reform the way elections are done in Texas and across the country, Jason.
Yeah, we've just seen this marching through state legislatures, especially the Republican-controlled ones all across the country, this in the wake of November of 2020. And a lot of it is predicated on the fears about the potential for voter fraud. This, of course, after we saw unprecedented accusations that there was voter fraud and that the results couldn't be trusted out of the November 2020 election. And, of course, on the other side of that, though, Democrats say that basically you are, foundationally basing all of these bills on what they call the big lie that there was voter fraud. Because as we saw in case after case after case in the courts, none of them could show that, yes, we had a pattern here of voter fraud and it affected the outcome of the election. And so we see these measures. They are controversial and they are numerous, as you say, and they're making their way through the different legislatures, including now here in Texas, where much of it is being spearheaded by Senator Paul Bettencourt, who is out of the Houston area. He is behind a whole raft of bills. In fact, Governor Abbott was in his district office not long ago touting the fact that Texas needs to do more in this area.
And we'll have that state senator from Houston on in just a moment, a Republican down there in Houston. But our first guest is a voice that we haven't heard talking about this in a while. We've had two Republican senators on our television program, but we're going to start this podcast with a deep dive with a Democrat. And our Democratic friend here is Edward Espinoza. He is from Progress, Texas. He's the director of Progress, Texas. It's a left-leaning organization that promotes progressive policies. It does rapid response media. If you're online, you've probably seen Progress TX tweeted or retweeted somewhere talking about Texas politics. We called Ed up down in Austin to get a read on you know, what's happening with this and really what's at stake with this here in Texas. You know, getting ready for this interview, I was reading around and trying to find out what people are saying about it. We've talked to Republican lawmakers in the past about this, but I saw editorials from the San Antonio Express News and from the Houston Chronicle, just scathing editorials against the Republican leadership in the state. In your opinion, Ed, what's at stake with SB 7?
The big thing with SB 7, which is the big bad voter bill at the legislature, I know a lot of people don't follow numbers, but what you need to know is it's a voting voter suppression bill, essentially. And what's at stake here is that Texas has been one of the lowest voter turnout states going back decades. And this bill would ensure that Texas remains one of the lowest voter turnout states. And that's just unacceptable. You can't think about this in terms of red and blue. You got to think about this in terms of right and wrong. And what is right is that our democratic system, this is a small d democratic, or the democracy is able to thrive here. And the way it's able to thrive is when people are able to participate. And when you slow that down, when you suppress that, that's wrong. And that, unfortunately, is what this bill is trying to do by doing things such as limiting voting hours, limiting how you can register to vote, limiting the way that you can cast a ballot. If you want to cast a ballot by mail, you might, and you're not old enough to do it, you need a doctor's note. Not only is that unenforceable, it's a violation of HIPAA laws, but these are the types of things that are in this bill. And it's unfortunate that that they've made it back. A lot of these things came up in the 2019 legislative session. It's unfortunate they've made their way back into 2021.
Ed, in other states where these sorts of measures are also being considered in legislatures, it seems like we've heard much more pointed rhetoric in those states. You know, we spoke with Senator Betancourt here in Texas, who's pushing a lot of this, and he makes it sound like this is just a lot of common sense reform of voting measures, and that he's just trying to prevent the possibility of voter fraud and trying to create some uniformity in the election system here. What do you make of that? The tone here seems like it's different than we see in other states.
I'm sure he's trying to sugarcoat it as much as possible. But if you're going to create uniformity, why not create the kind of uniformity that expands access instead of uniformity that limits access? And Senator Betancourt has no answer for that, because that's not what this bill intends to do. And I'll give you a perfect example of something very similar to this. The Republican voter ID bill that passed in 2011 sought to limit the type of IDs that people could use, and it had an unintended consequence. And what it was then was that women who had maiden names on their driver's license suddenly found that they had to cast a provisional ballot because it didn't fit the new voter ID law. Obviously, this is something from the past, but you see the unintended consequence hurt more people than it helped. And that's the issue with SB 7 that you're seeing in 2021, is that you're looking at a suite of laws that will hurt more people than it helps. It's based on the big lie of the 2020 election. And it's, again, things that we saw in 2019 that are bringing their way back in 2021. One of those provisions is that people, they want to require that a voter registration has to be filled out on ink and paper. So not only are we one of like 10 states that doesn't have online voter registration, they actually want to make it impossible for you to fill out a form online, have it mailed to you, where you just sign it and send it back. They say, no, that's not good enough. We want you to fill it out by ink and paper. What century is this that we're passing laws like this? It doesn't make sense. Why are we cutting off? Why do we say voting has to end at 7 p.m.? Why can't it go to 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. for people who are shift workers or the working class folks who need a little extra time to get there later, maybe get there earlier. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there are other states that already have the extended hours. Well, let's kind of dive into some of the nitty-gritty of what this bill is all about. One of the things it would do, Ed, is eliminate drive-through voting, which we saw a lot of in Harris County, outdoor voting and mass voting sites, which were big all across the state. Ballot drop boxes could not be used. We saw those used in November as well. We had State Senator Brian Hughes, who's the chairman of the State Affairs Committee, on our television program, Inside Texas Politics. He talked about one thing that the bill would do is actually purge non-citizens from the rolls. I think everyone probably agrees that we don't want non-citizens voting, but when you come down to purging people off the rolls, that gets really dicey and really tricky. Yep. And we saw what happened with that a few years ago. And then you mentioned the last big thing, and that is requiring anyone who wants a mail-in ballot to prove their disability with a doctor's note.
Unenforceable.
At the end of the day, I mean, here's kind of what I'm thinking on this. Not to drone on, because you're our guest here. I don't want to be like Wheeler and ask these long questions. But let me ask the long question. Let me ask it here. So at the end of the day, we know that this state is controlled by Republicans. This is going to pass committee, Ed. I think you probably know that. It'll probably pass the Senate as well, and the governor's waiting to sign it. The question is, can the House stop it? At the end of the day, what do you think?
Look, it can stop it in committee, and maybe it can stop it on the floor. A lot of these Republicans who got elected in the last cycle got elected by 2% or less. And many of their voters, Republican voters, remember, casting a ballot, the method of casting a ballot is not a Democratic or Republican issue. It is a voter issue. And when you have to go to these voters and say, hey, we're taking away a method of voting, I don't know how that's going to fly. So I think that one of the things that they have to consider now are, if you're going to vote, if you're going to take away a method of voting, how do you justify it? How do you explain that to people who are really just trying to go and make their voice heard? It doesn't fly. I'm sorry, I may have lost where your question was going with that.
No. If you're a Republican in the House, let's say you're a Republican in the House who just won by a couple of points, 5 points, less than 10. How do you get to a comfortable spot where you please leadership? Because that at the end of the day, both parties want to please their leadership. How do you please leadership on one hand, but secondly, find the right language to oppose this thing?
Ultimately, elected officials are accountable to their voters. And leadership may not like that, but leadership doesn't matter as much as the people they represent. And if they can't explain that to their voters and they can't stand up for the rights of their voters, then they don't belong in that chamber to begin with. And the leadership should understand. I don't know if the leadership does understand that, but certainly the elected officials should.
Well, Ed, let's say that these things do pass, though. How do you tie that to a legislator who is in a tight race come 2022? And beyond that, how do you invigorate your voters? How do you push them to the polls when it might be harder for them to be able to cast a ballot?
Well, look, I think that one of the backlashes that people have to consider is, how motivated will your voters be to show up and cast a ballot for you if they don't trust you, if they don't have faith in you? Or how motivated will they be if they simply are just mad at you and don't like you? And like, one of the things we saw in 2020 was we saw a really high voter turnout. And a lot of it was because voters were upset with Donald Trump. They wanted to send a message. Now, obviously, Texas stayed red, but that margin was diminished significantly this past year. And that is because voters wanted to have their say. Now, if these representatives, like I said, many of who won their race by 2% or less, want to take that risk, that's up to them. But it's a dicey proposition for them to do that.
We watched also a similar effort on the other side, the Democratic side, going on in D.C. right now. The House on the 3rd of March passed H.R. 1, the House of Representatives and Congress. It's almost the same bill, as you probably know, Ed, that passed 2 years ago in the House as well. But this one would create uniform national voting standards, overhaul campaign finance, outlaw partisan gerrymandering and things like that. But again, with each chamber having to pass these independently, how does that one make it through to the Senate and pass and become law?
You're talking about the national bill? You're talking about the state bill?
The national bill. The national.
Well,
bill.
Look, I mean, what you need at the national level is filibuster reform. And the filibuster has been abused at the national level to the point to where they're not even actually filibustering anymore. They're just signing a piece of paper to stop legislation. This is, you know, the Federalist Papers taught us about tyranny of the majority. What we're seeing with the filibuster is tyranny of the minority. And it needs to be reformed so that these voting reforms can take place. Otherwise, you're going to see abusive laws like the ones proposed here in Texas become law and stop people from voting. You know, Jason, one of the things you mentioned a minute ago is the ability to purge voter rolls or to make sure that citizens are voting. And look, we all want integrity in our elections. But let's go back to what happened 2 years ago in 2019 when the acting Secretary of State, David Whitley, put out a list of some 100,000 people who may have voted illegally. In his words, they may have voted illegally. The truth is, it was bad data that was 7 years old. And I believe all of those people, if not all of those people, then something like 99.9%, I'm not sure they found a single person on there that voted illegally. These were people that had later become naturalized and cast votes. Well, what happens if you remove 100,000 people from the rolls because you have bad data and you suspect that they may not be citizens? Not only is that discriminatory, but it alters the outcome of elections based on the demographic profile of a voter that you are suspicious of. That is a Jim Crow tactic to suppress the vote. It's unacceptable and it is illegal. And that's not the kind of thing that anybody should be standing for, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican.
And you imagine the process of trying to get yourself reinstated if you're one of those people who gets wiped off the rolls inadvertently. I want to ask you this because, you know, Republicans have been saying all along that they're just trying to improve the security of elections and trying to make sure that it's airtight. And they think that they may actually be able to get some Democrat support on some of these measures. Do you know of anything where Democrats would be willing to say, you know what, maybe we should address this and this and this related to the way elections are conducted as far as making them more secure?
You know, when they Republicans throw out these claims about voter fraud, yet they can point to no instance where voter fraud has occurred and on a level where it has had an outcome, changed the outcome to an election. I think that Republicans fail to understand that they are winning everything in this state. And if voter fraud is an issue, maybe they're the ones benefiting from it. It's kind of a contradiction with the way that they come out at this. And it makes you wonder, are they really interested in so-called voter fraud? Or are they interested in having some people making it easier for some people to vote and making it harder for others to vote? And I think that's the problem that we see here. By the way, no, I don't think the Democrats are going to come around on any of these issues because I think that these are all bad issues that they've put forward. And I don't think that they make any sense. Now, if they wanted to have a kind of issue where they say, okay, we want uniformity in election laws and uniformity expands access, yeah, I think they would get some Democrats to come around on that. But that's not what they're interested in with SB 7 or the House Companion Bill HB 6 or a number of other bills that are out there.
So Ed, this will be in the news a lot this week with the hearing on Wednesday in the Senate State Affairs Committee. If you're a Texas voter out there and you're kind of scrolling through your Twitter, your Facebook feed, or you're listening to this podcast, what would you tell people specifically to watch for?
I think the main thing to watch for is that when Republicans talk about election integrity, this is the word they use a lot, or the phrase that they use a lot, what does it mean? What do they mean by that? Are they going to make something more secure, such as like having voter registration be online voter registration? I mean, if you want to make voter registration secure and accurate, have it done online. They're not doing that. They're actually trying to do the opposite. They're trying to make sure everything is pen and paper. When they're looking to, when they're, do these laws that they're branding as one thing actually do what they say they're going to do? Are they going to protect integrity, or are they going to suppress the vote? And I think any kind of objective viewer is going to recognize that when you limit the hours of voting, when you pick and choose who can vote by mail, and when you require some sort of evidence for somebody to say they're disabled, which is not only, I've mentioned before that that is a HIPAA violation, could also be interpreted as a poll tax. When you look at these things together, that is not expanding the vote. That is suppressing the vote. And if voters are wise to this, and I think that they're also frustrated by it. And when voters are watching, what this should always come down to, what are the details of this bill? Because like the old saying goes, the devil's in the details.
But ultimately, if Democrats don't have the votes to stop this from happening in Austin, what do they depend on here? Do they depend on the frustration of voters to voice their opinions to lawmakers to try to prevent it that way? Do they count on stopping this in the courts after it has already been made into law? Or do they count on the possibility of a national law being passed by the Senate now and then signed by the president that would undo a lot of these things?
You mentioned three things. I would add a fourth, which is all of the above. I think that it's got to be all of the above here. Like the national piece is extremely important here, but you don't want to leave anything to chance. You know, you want to believe that our representatives are listening to the people they represent. And if that's the case, then ideally they'll make the right decision and they'll stop messing around with these voter suppression bills and focus on things such as COVID response or reforming the energy grid, all the things that voters want the legislature to focus on. These issues are not what people are asking for right now.
At the end of the day, though, Ed, stopping it in the Texas legislature seems iffy. Getting the national bill passed without getting rid of the filibuster, that seems iffy. And if you look at filing this in courts to stop it, and this were to make its way up and ascend to the Supreme Court, it's a right-leaning Supreme Court. I mean, this is really an uphill battle for the left, isn't it?
It's a right-leaning Supreme Court that ruled against every single voter case that Donald Trump brought before the court. And a lot of these laws being proposed are based on the same big lie that the Trump campaign pushed in 2020. And what most recently shot down one of those challenges last week. So, you know, I think that conventional wisdom would say that a partisan court is going to go one way. But the reality is that this court, this Supreme Court with three Donald Trump judges, did not vote for any of those cases before because the cases weren't based in reality.
Interesting perspective there. Ed Espinosa, Director of Progress Texas, thanks for taking the time. We know that this is a very busy time right now with a lot of balls in the air.
It's a busy time, and I admit, this issue is a tall order, but we got to keep fighting. And, you know, like I said, it's not a red or blue issue. It's a right or wrong issue. We got to keep fighting for what's right.
So that's the left's take on this. And clearly, Jason, it is an uphill battle for Democrats who oppose this. Even though they control the national level, House and Senate, they do not control anything at all here in Texas. So that's a challenge there. Before we move forward, though, in this podcast, let me remind you about a survey that's in the description of this podcast, wherever you get your podcast. If you go back to your mobile device there, you'll see the description. And inside that description is a link. We'd love to have you click on it. We ask you 10 questions, maybe 11, maybe 12. Whether you like Wheeler's hair better than mine, what your favorite beer is, how you found
Yolitics. That one's not fair.
It's not fair. You always have better hair.
That one wouldn't be fair.
True. True, it would not be. But nevertheless, we would love to know a little more about you. If you don't mind clicking down there when you stop to catch your breath, if you're like me and you're running or riding your bike and you have to stop at the top of the big hill, that's a good use of your 15-second break right there.
That is great. No ID required to fill that out, by the way. You can do it while standing in a line or driving through some place. Mail it in. We don't care how you
mail it
those
in
to us. Let's get back to ballots, though, here. Let's get back to the voting process, because we still have to hear from the other side. And this is a key side to watch because, again, Republicans have the votes all the way through the process here in Texas. And as we mentioned at the outset, Senator Paul Bettencourt is behind a lot of these initiatives for what he says is to increase voter integrity, voter security. You just heard Ed Espinosa there saying that basically means voter suppression. But again, let's hear the Republican side of things and let Senator Bettencourt lay that out. Let's get right to the criticisms, because we've been hearing this a lot here and in other states. Basically, the way it lays out, Democrats say that Republicans are using the falsehood of widespread voter fraud as a cover to limit voter turnout in future elections because 2020 didn't go the GOP's way. What do you say to that?
Well, I say the facts are completely opposite to that, because 2020 went the GOP way in Texas. We had a record turnout. Highest level and also the best percentages of turnout is in 30 years. So these criticisms aren't based in fact. Look, when I look at my Integrity 7 bills, which are voter integrity bills, what do they do? Okay, well, let's get rid of the hyperbole and talk about what they do. I don't think people should be registered in 2x3-inch post office boxes, okay? I've got nearly 5,000 people in Harris County registered in little P.O. boxes. They don't live there, so they shouldn't be able to be registered there. And when you look through these are common sense reforms, not some, you know, grandiose scheme to turn back what was a big successful election and turnout. That was clearly obvious by the numbers.
You know, you point to the fact that it was a big turnout and that it was a successful election. Did Texas have verifiable instances of voter fraud in 2020 that you know of?
Well, I know for sure that the Attorney General has initiated a case in Gray County and also a case in Bexar County against what are clearly voter harvester operations. When I was tax assessor, I actually had a conviction in this issue. So I know that voter fraud does exist, but if you notice all my press releases, talk about what do we need to do to make things better. And one thing that we did need to do in Harris County, or really in Dallas County, Tarrant County, you name it, is mail out absentee ballots to every person on the voter roll, because that would have cost hundreds of thousands, not millions of dollars, to get to the titanic turnout that we saw in November. We're not a universal absentee state like Oregon is, but we don't need to spend the money against the Supreme Court ruling, which is one of the reasons why I filed one of the bills specifically to in this case, I think it's Senate Bill 208, to stop that from happening in the future. Maintain voter integrity and follow the laws, because you've got to have a voter roll with integrity to start this process.
Now, one of your bills, though, would also limit the ability of local jurisdictions to extend early voting hours. We saw some popular measures, especially in the Houston area this last election, where they had 24-hour voting in some cases. We saw long lines in some of these urban areas around the state. Is there a potential that by limiting those hours that those lines get even longer? And is there a potential that you turn off some Republican voters with those lines?
Well, look, actually, by using uniformity across the state, we've got rural and suburban counties that don't have early voting hours past 4 or 5 o'clock. So people that get off work cannot go vote. Okay. And because they have short hours. So my pick of 7 to 7 is you standardize the hours across the state, so voters everywhere know where they can go. They can, whether they're in a rural county or an urban county, they know they've got till 7 to 7, and extend those hours through that weekend, so that even people that are on shift work can have the weekend to go vote if they need it. So part of this is that you want to standardize best practices, and that's just a part of it. And the actual numbers, for people that are using, they're using 20-hour voting were like, I think about 10,000, which sounds very big, but remember in a county like Harris, you know, that's just part of millions of registered voters and that turned out to vote. So we just have to look at what we're paying for, because there are issues like we're very difficult to get poll watchers, to do 24-hour shifts. You know, there's just things that we need to have a discussion about. And that's one of the bills I filed, because I think we need to have a discussion about it.
Let me ask you this. A lot is being said about, in election integrity and election security and making voters more confident in the process. If we see a lot of these bills go forward and they are partisan in nature and the vote on them is partisan in the end, is there a risk that you do the exact opposite, that you erode confidence in the voting process for a big chunk of the electorate that doesn't agree?
Look, one of the bills that we filed was a very important one, because it requires that it's 1112, which says you can never suspend signature verification on absentee ballots. Now, when you look at what happened in the battleground states, in Atlanta, in Philadelphia, in Detroit, and in Wisconsin, there were Republican secretary of states that made those decisions. There are other people that made similar decisions, but they should never make that decision, because as a former elections official, you must keep the signature with the ballot on absentee ballot. It's the only way to verify that person is the same that actually turned in that absentee ballot. There's no fact or supposition effect. There's no partisanship there. That's just simple good operations. And that's one of the bills. Those things and not registering at PO boxes. We just have to make good decisions for all Texans. And if we do, then we're going to get support from everyone that's looking at voter integrity as a problem.
But Senator, if these bills go forward with only Republican support, is there a concern that you'll have a big chunk of the electorate in Texas who feels like they don't have more voter confidence after these measures go through, that it was a partisan push?
Well, we haven't even had the bills to a committee debate, so I'm not going to assume this is going to be just a pure partisan vote. I think what we have to look at is what works and what doesn't work. I started as a voter registrar in Harris County when the last big presidential election that royal politics was 2000, Gore versus Bush. And we learned a lot about punch card ballots and what we didn't want to do. And we bought direct, electronic equipment, DREs at that point. Now, even Harris County, and I'm lauding them, they're buying a DRE with a voter verified paper trail. So we're learning over time. So let's learn from the election. Let's, like I learned from 20 years ago, what best practices are, because when I cleaned up the voter roll back then, and this is well documented, there were 50,000 deceased and felon registrations on the roll. 1% of those were voting in 1998. That's 500 votes. And that was roughly the margin of a victory in Florida in that 2020 presidential election. So I've made this a real study to because you have to use extreme detail when you do these type of voter roll cleanups. Even though they're mandated by law every 2 years, you have to really know what you're doing. And so I'm trying to use the simple phrase that I've used in adult life, which is what gets measured, what gets fixed. And we have things we need to fix, and let's have that discussion about it. And I hope that will garner bipartisan support.
And you hear his hope there. And if we go back to Ed Espinosa, he says fat chance of that happening. That is not going to get Democratic support in this state, not from legislators. And he says not from a lot of voters as well. We will see the fireworks as they start to go off on Wednesday. This was supposed to happen earlier in the week, but Democrats were able to delay this by just a few days at least. We will see if they have the ability to try to stop some of these measures from coming through. And again, again, Ed Espinosa there was saying it might depend a lot on the reaction of the public, you know, of constituents out there. So we shall see.
Yeah, Democrats really are trying to make this a big public event, and they should. That's their biggest hope moving forward, because they are vastly outnumbered when it comes to votes in the Texas Senate and the Texas House. But Ed did make a good point. If this does happen to go to the court, if it passes, and there's a strong likelihood that it passes the Texas House and Texas Senate and is signed into law, but this will obviously end up in courts almost immediately after it's signed into law. If it does end up in courts and does ascend to the U.S. Supreme Court, it's a right-leaning court because President Trump named three different justices there. Ed makes a good point. The Supreme Court during the 2020 election last fall, it didn't rule in favor of any of the claims brought forward by Rudy Giuliani or any of the Trump campaign. So we'll see what happens with that. But will this become law in Texas? It very good likelihood. Will it be challenged? You can bet it will be challenged. So there's another chapter to be written in this one, Jason.
And, you know, then I also wonder about that other layer, too. Are they poking the donkey here at a very crucial time, as you have some of these U.S. senators who've been kind of sitting on the fence, not knowing whether they should vote to get rid of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate? Again, before the U.S. Senate right now are sweeping changes to the way that we vote here in this country to make it actually easier and to give more access. And right now that filibuster is in the way. Might another state, I mean, we've been seeing all this happening in Georgia. We've heard about Arizona. Might, you know, if Texas does go forward with this and it creates enough noise, might that be enough to convince some of those more moderate Democratic senators who are sitting on the fence about that filibuster to go, you know what, it's time to do this so that we can start passing some of these things. So maybe the timing here will really matter just because of that.
It could. At the end of the day, though, every party in power wants to get rid of the filibuster because they need to get across the line. But I don't know if it's going to happen. Obviously, the far left of the party of the Democrats want to get rid of it. The progressives want to get rid of it. The more traditional conservative Democrats don't want to. I don't know who's going to have the stronger voice at the end.
Well, we're going to be sitting on the sidelines watching all of this play out, and it's happening simultaneously in all these different levels here. Thanks, as always, for listening to us today. Tell a friend about us or a family member. Tell them to follow us here on the podcast so they can get the episodes every Tuesday. And fill out that survey for us, please, down in the description part. We really appreciate that.